Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
And we are live. Hello, Axe of the Blood God. It is July 5th as we are recording. This is going to be a new episode of Axe of the Blood God. I'm your host, Eric Van Allen. Kat, once again, out for smokes, you know? It's out on the high seas. It happens sometimes, you know? She just goes off on a little pirating adventure. It's going to be okay. Nadia is still here. Nadia, how are you doing?
How are we going to pay last year's rent, Eric?
How are we gonna pay last year's rent?
This year, sorry everyone, we got talking about rent in the pre-show, and I know every word of the show, so I can sing it. I sang
some of
it.
Pre-show went kind of crazy this week. We had rent, we had how a trombone works, we had everything, you know, everything you could want from a premium show such as X the Blood God. You too can get into the pre-show if you back us at the Stars of Destiny level on patreon.com/bloodgodpod. But before we get into more plugs and more shameful advertising, we have a guest, Giovanni Colantonio. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you for having me. Excited to talk about things that are great in the world that we're all happy
about. Everything's fantastic. Nothing bad.
For the folks at home, Gio, why don't you introduce yourself, kind of what you do and all the moves you make in the industry, because you are an industry mover and shaker.
Oh my gosh, don't say that. I hope not. I'm Giovanni. I'm a video game critic. I write about video games. Surprise. You may know me from Digital Trends. I was working there for a good 6 years, I think, and I just had my last day on Thursday. I decided to take a step back from it, try some new things. So I am technically unemployed right now, but
Let's
I will
go.
Be starting up again, yeah. again incredibly soon. So I appreciate this. Is like my free agency run right now in these like 2 days, so I appreciate getting to come on doing this. Yeah
I actually had a couple of those when I was a dog groomer back in the long ago and far away, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go work somewhere else. I quit this dog shit company, and they don't want you to be around when you say you're going to quit, because they think you're going to steal all their clients, and you are. But so what they do is they immediately lay you off and give you 2 weeks pay, because by law, you're supposed to give 2 weeks over here. No one ever does. But so, yeah, they did that for me, even though I didn't really have any clients that I wanted to steal, because I was more of an assistant groomer. But yeah, I spent 2 weeks getting paid playing Super Mario, Paper Mario, A Thousand Year Door. And that was pretty sweet. I recommend it to everyone. Get a job where you can steal clients.
And they'll get rid of you real fast. Cutthroat? Like, are people like stealing clients?
It is cutthroat. It absolutely is cutthroat. I understand. There's like non-competitive clauses. No one listens to them. It's a whole thing. It's pretty great.
That's extremely cool.
The cutthroat world of dog grooming. Why don't we have a game about that yet? That should really be a thing.
When I see it, I see like Barbie's dog grooming it, and it's like, yeah, why don't we have a dog grooming game where you groom an entire nervous Bernese Mountain Dog that won't listen to anything you say? You finally get it done, and it shits on itself. There's a grooming game, and he got half an hour left to fix it. Good luck, stupid Mario.
All of that was fair, but I feel like asking the Great Bernese to listen. It's a dog. it is crucially a dog.
This dog crucially still needs to get washed and brushed and dried. So.
Okay. We have a lot of show to get onto, so we should get onto it. Before we get there, some housekeeping. Right now, our monthly game club is Trails in the Sky, second chapter. That's right. We're doing that as part of our sequels month on Axe of the Blood God. That is our current game club. You can go hang out in the Discord and talk about it there. We also have a side quest ongoing, Magic the Gathering 1. I'm so sorry, Criminal Justice Teeps and everybody else who wanted not Magic the Gathering to win. It's Sonic Chronicles all over again. What can I say? Like, I didn't even put the vote out in front of y'all. This was not my fault this time, but y'all still voted for Magic. So we are playing Magic the Gathering in the Discord every week. We still have to set up the actual play dates for that, but we will be doing some in Discord commander games and things like that. Even Poe, he's like, "You're playing Magic again, dude? That's the money you're supposed to spend on my food." I'm like, "It's okay, Poe, don't worry.
That's tuna money. What are you doing?"
I'm spending, yeah, that's the tuna money. Also, our fifth season podcast is out. Go check that out. That was our last side quest. Go listen to that if you want to hear us end our chat about the fifth season. It was a really good book. Highly recommend that. Charlie and Dropouts is ongoing, as always. Vic has been doing a great job over there alongside Nadia and all the other folks. You know, Mike is showing up there too. We got all kinds of Dropouts content. Make sure that you check that out. 14 stuff. It's going down. 0.3 is like pretty soon, right? It's August, I believe. Yeah.
Getting closer. It always sneaks up on you.
Yeah, so get ready, get caught up, and go listen to the Dropouts. The newsletter is here. We got a weekly newsletter. Nadia writes it. It's unhinged. It barely goes through edits. We just kind of let it happen, you know? Sometimes you got to let the fire hose go untapped, you know? You got to just blast it.
I am someone who I completely consent to edits. I know that, you know, I'm not a perfect writer. I'm not a great editor. So I like my book, for example, like it's taken a year to edit, and I'm glad it did, because, you know, an editor can tell you, oh, well, this sentence sounds better here. This does sounds better here. And sometimes it had nothing to do with how well you write or how well you don't write. But sometimes you just got to scream. Like there was a time I don't think US Gamer would have let me do what I did with the newsletter yesterday, which was just like, I'm just going to, you know, what's the word I use? Like I'm going to paraphrase Benny the Cab from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, like, Sister Mary Frances, I ain't never seen a mess like this, and I've been a games writer for 20 years. Like, that's pretty much the attitude of the latest newsletter. Please sign up for it if you just want me to spew. I think it's okay to spew sometimes.
It's blogging. It's just raw form blogging.
Yeah. At this point in everything, I think you've earned the right to spew.
I think so. I'm old. Sure. Yeah. I'm in pain all the time. I'm cranky. I'm just going to spew.
And one last housekeeping note, of course, we have our Stars of Destiny, our backers over on the Patreon. Thank you so much for backing at that tier. If you want to join that tier, listen to the pre-show and the post-show. You can do that over at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. This week's Star of Destiny is Nuclear Sandwich. Thank you so much for backing us and doing all the stuff that you do over here on the Blood God. Main show topic, what the fuck is happening at Xbox? Like, oh boy.
This episode's not PG-13. We've used up our one fuck already, and we have several fucks to give.
No, we're outside. We're outside 5 minutes. We're fine. Okay, so top level. Let's start there. More than 9,000 jobs due to be cut at Microsoft, including many at Xbox. I did find an interesting note that we may not know the full scale and those impacted yet due to WARN Act compliance. So keep that in mind as we go through the story. There are some things with that, as well as the union that is, I believe, negotiating right now in terms of how these layoffs are due to happen. For context, recent massive layoffs in the games industry, to give you a sense of scale, it was over 9,000 jobs cut at Microsoft, including those at Xbox. For context, recent massive layoffs include 900 at PlayStation, 530 at Riot Games, 860 at Epic, and 1,900 at Xbox.
Do they work there anymore? They just hollow everyone out.
Yeah, one of the things about being Microsoft is that you can just afford to employ an ungodly amount of people if you're Microsoft. But that also means that the decisions you make end up affecting a whole lot of people. So, reporter Jason Schreier over at Bloomberg and a bunch of others have been slowly trickling out details. They've been doing some great reporting this week. That includes hundreds of cuts at King. About 10% of its workforce was the report from Jason Schreier over at Bloomberg. An Xbox memo to staff acquired via IGN from Phil Spencer said it was to position gaming for enduring success and to allow Xbox to focus on strategic growth areas. Now, that's all bullshit.
Yep. But, what was he got on Phil Spencer?
I find the notable pull quote to be, From Phil Spencer, this is full, unedited, full bore quote. I recognize that these changes come at a time when we have more players, games, and gaming hours than ever before. Our platform, hardware, and game roadmap have never looked stronger. The success we're seeing currently is based on tough decisions we've made previously. We must make choices now for continued success in future years, and a key part of that strategy is the discipline to prioritize the strongest opportunities, end quote.
I have a request for Victor. When you edit this, please put like do over the background as Eric reads that complete fucking nonsense. Thank you.
I'll leave that up to Victor's discretion.
Just like the absurdity of having to like still pump yourself up in front of shareholders, mm-hmm. This is a horrible moment, especially considering the fact that we rule and we're killing it. Yeah. Everything's mm-hmm. so good. Mm-hmm. It's like,
everything's great.
Don't do that. Read the room.
Yeah,
we're doing this because we're in great position.
Yeah,
we will get into full discussion in just a moment. I want to hit a few more of the major beats before we get there. Yes. Projects canceled include Rare's mm-hmm. Fantasy Adventure Everwild. Also, several key head departures over there. There is the reboot of Perfect Dark, which was shown at SGF 2024. There's an unannounced MMO codenamed Blackbird that was going to be coming out of ZeniMax, I believe. Caught up in all this, as Poe blocks out my camera, caught up in all this, somehow is Romero Games, which, according to reports, had a funding deal that seems like it fell through. There's a lot of weird reports coming out of there, so I don't want to lend too much credence, grain of salt, all that. But there were some reports coming out that due to that, the entire development team might have been shuttered. That I will say, I can't speak to the situation at Romero Games. I can say that I have talked to many either smaller outfits comparatively to something like Microsoft, but even into the AA space, where sometimes a lot of those projects, especially early on, can really rely on having a big ticket funding to justify the team size and the project that they're going to be working on for the next at least 3 years, probably mm-hmm. 2 to 3 years. Yeah, that sucks. How'd this happen, y'all?
I was actually thinking back to when Kat and I think you were probably there at the time too, Eric, we're talking about the acquisitions, and at that time mm-hmm. Activision was in a really miserable place, and you know, innocent summer children as we thought maybe it'd be good for it to be part of Microsoft. And then, you know, the general sense though is that, and this is always the case, acquisitions are just never good, because even in a case where, say, things are great, like for Microsoft, everything was okay for a while, and all it takes is one executive to say, what the fuck is this? And everything turns miserable, and you're, mm-hmm. you can't escape. You're not part of this conglomerate. So I think what happened to me, at least what my guess is, part of it had to have been the deal in the first place that turned the Eye of Sauron onto Phil Spencer. That did not go as planned.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people kind of talking about this and kind of being like, oh, this is part of like the wider story of the industry being dead and gaming being dead. And I think like there are issues in the industry, and we see like tons of layoffs at various studios, and EA is going through things like that. And, there are like serious issues like this across the industry. But I think this is just a Microsoft problem very specifically here. Like,
yes.
What a truly, truly mismanaged company at every level.
Oh,
like,
just miserable.
Yeah, and you know that like all of this money is going to go to like some AI project that is going to like completely fail in 2 years'
time,
right? I have
incredible news for you.
Oh boy.
Microsoft is a major investor in OpenAI behind ChatGPT, and Microsoft itself has reportedly, according to reports that I found, struggled to sell Copilot over ChatGPT. I would personally choose death, but you know,
Sophie's
choice.
Yeah, this coincides with moves at Microsoft at large to allocate a significant sum of money in its bid for artificial intelligence, as every major player in the tech industry that just really makes you recoil a little bit, you know, like your Meta and things like that kind of all lean into the potential of AI, which is really just like it's something where like I woke up this morning because it is pouring rain here in Austin. Yeah. And I typed into Google, do I have to evacuate? and in that moment, because I had the thought, because I was like, I know how dumb Google can be sometimes, that if I just type this, it will probably know what I'm talking about and do that. And I was like, huh, that seems like a reasonable application for some sort of large language learning model. And it's important we call these things what they are, an LLM. To spit back out and be like, I see you're reporting in from Central Texas. Let me pull up the whatever National Weather Service and check for you. And like, cool, thank you. Thank you, buddy. Thanks. I'm not gonna say an assistant name, so don't set off anybody's little smart speaker or whatever. But
it's funny when
I did debate. I was like, maybe every podcast I should just start yelling like, Alexa, play American Pie at full volume, just to see like if I get somebody. So if I got you with that just now, like, please inform me. But a lot of these applications are just bizarre dreams that honestly start and end with worker replacement. Because somebody put it very well on Blue Sky this last week, and they said something about like, there's always talk of AI is going to make your job easier. Mm. Oh, word. So is your workday going to be 4 hours instead of eight? Nah, man. It's going to be 8 hours of more work, or you're just not going to have a job. It's one of the two. Like, or it's you're not have like to pretend that to look ever busy. Changes.
There's always the worst.
Yeah.
It's. The thing that kills me about this stuff is like, you know, I think we're like a couple of years into this push now, right? And I think like the argument is always kind of like, well, you know, it's going to take time and the stuff is going to like get better. And like, obviously, the beginning of it's going to be all sloppy. But like, it's been years of this and it's still as bad like as it was 2 years ago. Like I Googled like something this morning. I think I was trying to search for like, like, oh, like how many collectibles are in Mario Kart World? And it was like, oh, you know, pulled up an AI summary, whatever. And it's like, as I was scrolling through it, it's like, oh, there's like 250 of this, or there's 150 of this thing, there's 200 of this thing, and there's 500. That makes for 1,700 collectibles total. And I was like, that's not the number. That doesn't add to that. Like, what do you mean? 1,700? That's not right.
You can't even do math, and you're...
It doesn't get better. It's crazy.
Can you imagine matching someone on a Hinge and they're like, now hear me out, all right, the first few years they're gonna be rough, all right, but there will be improvement. We will get better.
there's no other application where that is a thing, where it's like, we're gonna launch this thing that is gonna like determine the flow of information on Earth, and it's not gonna work for 5 years, and hey, that's okay. Give us a pass. It's like, absolutely not. That's an F out the gate, brother.
So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Geschenke, mit denen niemand rechnet. Bis zum 26.12. in deiner Rewe-App. Einfach täglich öffnen und Coupons und Gewinnchancen sichern.
Rewe, dein Markt.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Yeah, so all of that is caught up in this, but I did want to quickly rewind the tape a little bit to kind of look at Microsoft and its place in the games industry as a whole, because I think that starts to illustrate what it is, because Microsoft, obviously a company that existed before Xbox, and this was always a company that is the Windows company, right? It's one of the major big tech booms of its era. And at some point they got it in their head, hey, this video games thing, we should probably be involved in that. We should probably like get into that. The Xbox, the original Xbox, you know, it showed up. It had some stuff. I played Cell Damage, but like it's
we all did.
I played Dead or Alive 3. But it was the Xbox 360 that really kind of put Microsoft's console ambitions on the map, I would say. And then you know, how many rakes can one step on, you know, from there
all
on out?
The rakes. I mean,
the Xbox One, we all remember the infamous, like, here's how to share a video game type stuff. And I think the Xbox Series never really got off to a solid footing. It always felt like it was a pace behind. And I emphasize all this because we're not going to sit here and play fantasy football. We're not going to be like, how does Xbox fix this? They fix this by rehiring people. They fix this by putting some punitive measures on the people who are making the decisions that steer the boat into the cliffs and not the people who are just trying to row the boat a little bit faster.
There's also the fact that a lot of these layoffs, including, I don't actually know the full story here, but like a lot of these layoffs happen because they want to destroy whatever unions have formed. Even like, no matter how like weak and small they are at the beginning, they just want to snuff them out.
I mean,
the Urquan Cora.
I mean, there's
that's a maybe
there's maybe some merit to the idea that is a thing, but because I mean, just speaking broadly, union busting, God, tech companies love it.
But
I do think this is probably more indicative of Microsoft as a whole.
In this case, for sure.
I also think to some degree we have Xbox acquiring a significant number of studios. We had the 2018 acquisitions of stuff like Ninja Theory and Compulsion. We have the Bethesda acquisition, which finalized in 2021. And we have the big ticket Activision Blizzard acquisition, which finalized in 23, I believe. That's a lot of money to spend. That's a significant amount of money to spend. That's billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Much of the Western arm of RPG development locked.
And so you have all that happen. You have this company pick up, just hoover up massive amounts of studios.
Yep.
And then we get reports coming down from games like Redfall and things like that of leadership not being able to manage this sort of thing. Yeah. And now we have layoffs. And so I wrote here as I was typing these notes up, I had a little soapbox moment where I said, we oftentimes try to fantasy football video games, but the core truth behind it is often a lot more complex, not necessarily only about the games painted by the real world, and often a much uglier, more soul crushing picture. Because the sad truth is, We love to think of video games as, oh, just talk about the games. I know that this episode is probably going to get some people being like, all they ever talk about is industry stuff. Yeah, because this is what happens. Man, like this is like
this is things, where games come from. They don't spring from nothing.
Like a bunch of money gets spent on stuff, both at Microsoft and at Xbox, but also Microsoft decides it wants to funnel a bunch of money into a different venture, and suddenly they decide to start hacking off pieces of the company to make it happen. This is the machine. It was never built to do anything but this. And the fact that it spits out video games is just kind of like a loose benefit for you. It's nice that it does that, but the machine is made to make money. And I look at this, and it's maybe a very nihilistic approach to look at it this way, but this is the ugly side of, like, this is what happens when a major company is allowed to hoover up giant pieces of the industry writ large and then essentially just cave it all in. And if I may conclude this soapbox, there is a stain on Xbox's hands. Commensurate to the likes of Embracer and Electronic Arts at this point. The Arcane Austin we've barely even talked about. Like, that's, you talk about Tango Gameworks and everything that happened there. Like, there is a giant
BioWare
blotch now.
Dying.
And
that's like an Edmonton studio, which Canada is very proud of. And
I think
it's just,
I think I missed this too, but there's Warcraft Rumble is basically going on life support too, right?
I think that was on the list.
I can't say hopes are high for Blizzard on them ever getting back to anything that's not World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Or Diablo. Yeah.
The thing that drives me wild about this wave, because as you alluded to earlier, like, this was part of ongoing waves of layoffs at Microsoft, right? Like, this has been happening for the past year or 2 years, whatever, is like, the last couple of waves, they have like made it very clear that like we are managing these things badly, right? And I think they said that kind of like in so many words during the last wave, where they were like, we haven't done a good job at managing all these studios, and we have like all these studios now, we've just over invested in all of them, and we haven't been doing a good job of managing them. So like, they know what the issue is, And I just don't understand how they haven't done anything to resolve that, right? Like, how has nobody on, like, the Xbox leadership side gotten this problem under control? And I look at something like Perfect Dark, where that game has been in development for, what, like, 8-10 years?
Ages, you know, like, it's been a while. Yeah.
Unbelievable amount. And, like, how does it get that far along? Like, how have you built this quadruple A studio, whatever they were calling it, and, like, that project has gone through the amount of, like, hurdles it has gone through, and, like, you recognize that there are management issues that are leading to that and that are hurting that project. And how does it just keep happening? And how do the people who are in charge of management keep getting away with, like, well, you know, like, we screwed up, but we're going to keep our jobs, and literally all of you are going to be gone. Like, it's so mind-boggling to me. And it seems like, obviously, these things are more complex, and there's no, like, well, you just fix it, guys. But I mean, like, you've known this is an issue for years and years. Like, how do we get to this point still after all of that? It's wild.
I'd love to know a little bit more about maybe there has been some reveals, but just what the management issues are specifically. Like, is there just no one really control? Rare is a veteran studio and they can't control a project. That seems very strange to me. I wonder what happened.
Yeah, and again, like, how it's more like studios, right? The studios themselves are going to have management issues, right? That's always going to happen. But, like, you're Xbox, you're Microsoft. Yes. You put the money into these studios to help them succeed. It is in your best interest to go in when, like, you see a project taking 8 years to make, right? And go, like, and hey, what can we do to
do
help?
Some management.
That's why we bought you, right? To, like, help
to
you
be
make
honest,
games.
Like, I know the struggle between capitalism and creativity is always going to be just, like, you know, but to be honest, a lot of us creative types are very scatterbrained, and we sometimes need someone to say, hey, this project needs to be done. Go on this path. I know I do sometimes.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it was absolutely Microsoft's responsibility to say, hey, Rare, you are a veteran studio capable of incredible things, and you're actually managing Sea of Thieves, one of our few successes right now. Maybe we can help you with Everwild, because that looked great. And of course, Perfect Dark is just never going to be perfect.
So crazy. It's
an era of, I mean, we've seen this across a lot of studios, and I feel like there's been a bit of the, like, the sky is falling down in games right now, right?
Of course, yeah.
That's kind of like the broad sentiment is, we talked about all those layoffs at the beginning, right? Across a wide swath of some of the largest video game publishers and video game companies, and Microsoft is maybe the most obvious example of this kind of all coming down, but it's happening at Sony, it's happening at Epic, mm-hmm. it's happening at Unity, it's happening everywhere. And it's, you don't really know what the answer is, because I swear to God, if I see one more LinkedIn post that's like, just be like Toby Fox, it's like, Toby Fox built Undertale in a cave
planning.
With a box of scraps.
scraps in a cave.
Yeah. It's like, first of all, that's a very large misunderstanding of how Undertale was made. But also, like, even the fact that Toby has talked openly about having to acquire a larger team and get their help to work on Deltarune to make it what it is now. And you talk about people like Eric Barone, Concerned Ape over at Stardew Valley, and Stardew Valley is not made by one person. There's a lot of people that work on Stardew Valley. That's one thing that drives me up the wall. But it's also the idea that all of this is happening because there was a massive consolidation. There was a massive gathering of resources under umbrellas, under banners. I'm not saying that this is a console wars thing. It was weird how Console Wars got wrapped up in it a little
bit.
Yeah,
that was kind of strange.
There was the odor. Like you were kind of in the room and you could smell Console Wars coming in from the other room.
God,
you know,
like, the 90s.
Terrible.
Get me out of here.
Yeah.
It's like when you're drinking LaCroix, and it's not really like the flavor of the thing that it says on the can, but like if somebody said the name of the flavor as you're drinking it, you're like, oh yeah, it does taste like that. Like, that's what it's like. But like an Embracer, to be fair, it's not just the console wars people. It's also Embracer acquiring so much. I still don't know how they did that. That's going to be a story
that
one day,
wild.
I'm sure. Yeah.
That was just wild. God.
Even, you know, the likes of, again, we go back. I think EA was one of the earlier versions of this where they were hoovering up companies and then just kind of like stripping them for copper parts and wire, man. Like, it's RIP Westwood, but
oh man,
it's crazy to see the fallout and ramifications of it now, especially as I think video game spending is one thing, but people, the way people are spending is completely different too. And also what companies see as the vision and what they want to invest in. And right now, again, it goes back to things like AI. Even before that, it was people were like, oh, Web3, crypto, NFTs. Yeah, that lasted a really long time. Yeah. How are those apes doing right now?
I feel like at least part of the answer to all of this can be taken up to the fact that AI, I think, is a huge, just wanting that push to make AI a thing. I feel like all these tech bros are jerking each other off, trying to like be the one to make AI replace workers and just rule the world, whatever stupid ideas they have. And Microsoft is just, I've heard that, like, as you read, Eric, like, we'll just give this job to Copilot. And CEOs are dumb. It's one of the most terrifying things I've realized. CEOs are dumb and they think they're smart. And they just don't think of people as human beings. They can't, because these companies are too big. But they're human beings, and they are in charge of other human beings, but they don't think of themselves as that.
Yeah. For me, it all just kind of comes back to this, like, infinite growth mindset that I think is
line go up,
hitting,
line go up.
Hitting a ceiling really hard. Like, you know, you forget, I guess, that, like, a lot of this stuff happened during, like, the COVID bump, right? Where game spending was up, and everyone was playing games more, because obviously everyone was playing games more because we were locked inside, and there's one thing you can do inside. Yeah, we were making bread, and we were depressed, and we
made a lot of
video games. Yeah.
Don't make fun of it. That's a sign that they're extremely distressed.
So I mean, like, there was this whole, like, infinite growth, like, this is going to go up forever, and when people can go outside again, they're going to play video games more. And it's like, that was the issue out the gate, right? Yeah, really, really smart,
stupid asshole.
But then I also just think about, like, this idea of infinite growth and, like, just games having to constantly get bigger, right? And I especially think about that with Perfect Dark, where, like, they kept stressing, this is the first quadruple A video game, which is still the dumbest thing I've ever heard, right? Like, what? It doesn't mean anything. You can't just add an A to the acronym. It doesn't work like that. But, you know, it seemed to come from this idea of, yeah, like, we have to figure out a way to make the game bigger, and the games have to be bigger, and they have to keep expanding, and we have to keep making the sales pitch that, like, more people are going to play this game if it's larger. And it just doesn't work like that. And I think, like, Nintendo is such an interesting counterpoint to it right now, where, like, they're still doing their thing, right? Like, Nintendo's still making Mario Kart. They made it a little bit bigger, but it's still Mario Kart, right? Donkey Kong, maybe a little more ambitious, but it's Donkey Kong. And I don't understand. I think it feels like we're hitting this kind of end of the, like, push for the quadruple A game, which I think was happening over the past couple of years. And it makes me wonder if, like, Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to be the last, like, enormous game of that scale, you know. And I'm sure it won't be. I'm sure there'll be stuff after it, but it feels like investment in projects like that is not quite panning out. Though when Grand Theft Auto 6 is an enormous sales success, everyone's goldfish memory is going to be like, oh cool, time to make that. We're all going to make that.
We're going to make it in 6 months and with half the budget.
Yeah,
it's funny because I see people, I have seen questions before, like, why do people think GTA 6 is going to suddenly, like, save the industry? And the really stupid answer, which is going to make you really hate a lot of aspects of modern life, is the idea is that if GTA 6 comes out and is a huge system seller, console seller, like, people want to play video games because of GTA 6. Then it stands to reason that maybe they'll play other video games, and so investors might want to invest in other video game companies to get a piece of that pie and get in early. That's like a really dumbed down, stupid way of putting it, and I'm a very dumbed down person who, that's how I contextualize it, because I don't bother to learn more than that. But it also kind of reveals the whole thing behind the curtain, you know, the wizards being shown off, because it's like, yeah, that's like these products. Alana Pierce did a video on this a while ago that I thought was very poignant. That was about, a lot of times it actually helps to go look at some of the shareholder Q&As and stuff, which are public. They have to be public.
Some of them are soul destroying.
Yeah, but also they're answering questions and they care about the responses of shareholders. Yes. And that's and so it is really comical when the shareholders start asking very pointed game questions. Like, there was a good era of Ubisoft when I was still at US Gamer, where I was covering the Ubisoft financial calls, and they were a hoot and a half every time, because I think Ghost Recon, like the bad one, had just come out.
Oh,
and yeah. There were shareholders from like banks, you know, you would not expect them to care about video games much. And usually when they would ask questions, it'd be like, how do you think about the returns in the fiscal third versus last year's and stuff like that?
Games suck.
And they're just like, so do y'all not check these video games to make sure they're not shit before you publish them? It's like, oh my God, when they start asking those questions, you're like, oh boy.
Oh, this is going to be a good one. It's going to be a good call.
It's a good time. But yeah, I think it's really interesting to look at this stuff, because I do think smaller scale dev is becoming more popular. There was a, if you go watch it, there was a recent Arc System Works like showcase, broadcast, summer debut, whatever you want to call it, where they showed off a lot of new games they're working on that are coming up and set some release dates, kind of your classic summer stream, right?
Yeah.
At the very end, Daisuke over at Arc System Works was talking about the last project they were revealing, and he was being very open and saying, like, we are known as the fighting game company and we do all right by that, but we want to expand. But we also realize that it's very difficult to do that right now. So this next game we're gonna show is from somebody in our company who pitched it. We really like the idea. It's an action game. It's not exactly within our wheelhouse, but we think that we need to invest in future talent. But also we need to make it at a scale that's sustainable. We can't make this like a super AAA, you know, high budget game, because that's not the reality. It's like a very candid talk from somebody at a company. But I think that is the point a lot of companies are hitting is, number one, they're having to scale a little bit differently. I think some companies have been in the process of doing this. We talked about the Square Enix, you know, talk that has been coming out of that camp for a while now, about them kind of reconfiguring what their goals are moving forward. You have like Warner Bros, who's like, that's it, all chips on Mortal Kombat and Harry Potter. That's it. But you also have a lot of companies seizing the moment and being like, okay, well, clearly we need to trust in our creatives, trust in our new talent, and scale appropriately. And that was why for a while I thought that, like, oh, Xbox might have something here, because you had games like Pentiment and Hi-Fi Rush, and it was like, okay, maybe they had figured out something ahead of everybody else. They were on top of it. To circle around and bring it back home, Hi-Fi Rush Tango ain't there anymore, man.
Yeah, they were the first, one of the first gone.
They saw like a beloved game getting game awards recognition and were like, but actually does that fit the portfolio? Yeah, and that kind of, in a nutshell, highlighted the core problem that was always going to be there for me. Yeah. Right, is we talk about all the times that Square Enix set ridiculous sales expectations for games, and then we're like, it didn't sell 20 million copies. It's like, yeah, man, a lot of games don't sell 20 million copies.
most don't.
Honest, it's pretty awesome when they sell like 2 million copies. That's a good day.
A kid, it was like, you know, holy shit, Final Fantasy VI sold 500,000 copies, that's great.
Yeah, so I do like, I wonder if like the industry is slowly like reverse engineering itself back to like what it was in the 2000s, if they're just like slowly starting to like get to this point of like, maybe we should like not make every game be 8 years to develop and cost $1 billion, and maybe we should be like making six of those games at the same time, like maybe that's a bad idea. And I kind of wonder if we are going to get back to that point of like, what if we had like manageable projects that we can kick out? And I think I'm really interested to see what happens with like Sony with that, right? Where it's kind of like, hey, Astrobot, right? They made this like very small game that they had resisted making for a decade, you know, at this point or whatever.
Because they always wanted like those movie games.
Right, exactly, like the cinematic game where like, oh, your studio is going to have to crunch to make the physics perfect and every detail of it perfect. And I do wonder if we're going to get back to that a little bit, where it's kind of like, hey, what if we had smaller projects and they're coming out more often and people like them? And I think it, you would have to think that a lot of these companies are looking at stuff like Helldivers or looking at stuff like, even like a Bellatro and being like,
even like Hades.
Something. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like looking at these things and and being like, clearly something is resonating, and kind of go back to that. But at the same time, it feels hopeless because, again, it just feels like we're on this kind of like hockey stick trajectory where it's like, no, we have to put
oh my God.
Money at it.
Not the like, hockey stick trajectory. Yeah.
When like the Xbox, the thing that drove me crazy was like when the, you alluded to it, but like when the Xbox layoffs happened last time where like they got rid of Tango and everything, they specifically said like, we want to focus on building games that win awards. That was like something that they said at the time. They were like, we want award-winning games. I presented an award to Hi-Fi Rush at the New York Game Critics Circle. Like I gave them an award. And so like, that's not true. You know, like your idea of an award game is not accurate. I don't know. It just, it feels like no one is self-aware about anything that's happening.
It just feels like, okay, we know we're talking here. Like, yeah, small games can take off. We were talking, we're naming a bunch of them here. And yet companies are over here. I don't know where the fuck they're living, but they're just saying stuff that doesn't, it just isn't true. Hi-Fi Rush is one example, but there was another example of, I don't know, Microsoft saying something about wanting to make games recently or wanting to make great games, and you just fired everyone, you dickholes. What do you want them to make?
I've talked about this in the past, and sorry, this might be another soapbox for me. We talk about what the ramifications of the erosion of games media has led to. And when I used to talk about doing news stories on games, my thing was always like, I want to add context. I don't want to just spit the press release back out. I will tell you that there are people, often not at like the super high level size, but there are some folks who are just like, oh, I just want the press release. I'll just repost the press release. I'll do that. And some folks do good work by that. Some folks just kind of repost the press release. The thing about reposting the press release is that's sometimes all that the reader is going to see. And I think it's important personally for there to be context in that. That's what the role of a writer, of somebody who is picking that story up. So if they were writing about the layoffs, then they're going to contextualize that within the idea of like, Hi-Fi Rush has been a massive success for Xbox and they're trying to pretend like it isn't. Yeah. and it's important to have that context, in the conversation these days, because I'm just going to be honest, sometimes companies are going to lie. Sometimes companies are not going to tell the truth.
Yeah,
they're not going to lie to shareholders. They can't do that. God. But to us, to people who are buying their games, yeah, they'll say some shit. Yeah, it's fine. And like, ultimately, their job is to make money and they are not out to serve you necessarily. That's what that Alana Pierce video was about, is like, ultimately their responsibility is to the shareholders. Their responsibility is to make money and profit. Some people try to do that altruistically and some do not. And
a lot do not.
That's why it's important to recognize like who's on your side in a lot of this, because a lot of people, for some reason think that like journalists hate video. If any of us hated video games, we wouldn't still be in this line of work, man.
We absolutely would not.
I'm gonna just tell you that much.
I ain't making my money, I'll say that.
I love when people say that, because like, oh yeah, like I really enjoy like eroding my eyesight every day, you know, like it gets worse every day. I love doing that because I hate this.
You're talking to someone who got eye surgery, man. Like I'm very familiar with it. It's literally like, yeah, this ain't you know the dream gig that some people imagine in their mind. It is an interesting and fun job, but for reasons that would surprise, that's for a different episode. But what I will say is like, companies will do what they're going to do to try and make the bottom line go higher, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to recognize in this moment like what our own roles are in that. I'm not saying like you necessarily have to like it's your fault that this happened or whatever. If you had bought more Xbox games, they wouldn't have done this. But I do think it's at this point worth considering like what do you want to support? What do you want to back? I buy a lot of games on Steam, and a lot of the ones I buy are indie games that maybe I'll play one day and maybe I don't. But if I see a studio doing something really cool and I'm like, that's really awesome, I think that's a neat game, I'll put, you know, $10, $15, $20 down on it and say like, yeah, I'll pick that game up. Maybe I'll play it one day, but now I also know that some money has gone into their pocket. Same if you want to go to Itch, which I think for the most part has a pretty good split for a lot of indie devs. Support those teams, but also support the workers, support the people, because they're ultimately the people that make the things that you care about. And I mean, the human cost of these layoffs cannot be understated. It is 9,000.
I can't even get my head around 9,000. When you think about it, we've been boiling ourselves in this pot for so long that, like, you know, it was like, wow, that's 1,000 seems like nothing now, even though that's still like disgusting.
Yeah. Everything I just said about media folks goes absolutely the same for developers who are tirelessly working in underpaid roles to make the things that you enjoy. And it is, we talk about layoffs as if they're just numbers on a page, and they're not just numbers, and they're not just a single developer. They're families, they're households, they're entire, like, honestly, regions in some cases that get upset when hundreds of jobs are lost. And that sucks. And
a
that
lot
needs
of people
to be
relocated
at the core
for those jobs too, it needs to be said.
Yeah, sure. Too expensive ass cities. Yeah.
It's not good.
It is
wild. Like, I remember when like one of the 900 job layoffs happened. I think like was it Sony that was like 900 or something like that? And at the time being like, I can't even fathom that. Like, I was like, this is incalculable. And like, that many people being on the job market now, and there's like, not how you can't possibly fill 900 roles. And now we're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands more than that. It's really unfortunate. And, you know, like, I'm glad those people were able to get employed for the time that they were. And I'm glad that they were able to get the credits that they got. And hopefully they can take that knowledge and go and move on to brighter and better things and at studios that are managed by human beings.
Competent people.
And yeah, there's someone there helping them. But again, it's just like trying to think about how many jobs that really is. I mean, it's sad. It's just really sad to think about that. And I feel for all the developers who are in that position. I mean, it's just, I can't imagine how like crowded that space is right now. It's rough.
I mean, I'm a freelancer outside of this job, this podcasting job. I do a lot of freelancing, and you know, God bless the people who got laid off, but you know, that's also my territory. Like, I'm an old hawk watching all these youngsters coming into her field. And you ever read that Animorphs book where Tobias had to eat roadkill because there was a hawk like bullying him out of his hunting space? I'm eating roadkill, people. Actually, it's not that bad. I'm hanging in there, but yeah.
There's a lot That's of good. Weird stuff that happens in Animorphs, huh?
I like love Animorphs. Yeah. Jesus Christ, read Animorphs.
I always remember the starfish one. That's the one that's like really
haunting. I haven't even
haunting.
Read the starfish one.
What happens in
it
the starfish
sounds haunting.
One?
Okay, like body horror warning for the next like five minutes or so, let's say. If I remember correctly, and Chad, if you're an Animorphs aficionado and you I'm getting something wrong, you tell me. Someone Animorphs into a starfish, and we all know that starfish can like regenerate, right?
Yes.
Oh god, no.
Something ends up happening where they like lose parts of their body and like have to slowly reanimate them and stuff like that. It describes it all in like excruciating detail in a children's book.
Yes.
And like if you're reading this and you're like, oh, I just got the new Animorphs book, I'm so excited. And those books, they go hard. They go
do.
Crazy
I
hard. I think I only read maybe like three or four of them, but I remember obviously some of them very well. They're pretty solid and they do some crazy stuff in them. Shout outs to Animorphs, man. We need to
honestly, like Animorphs, K.A. Applegate really predicted the future. Just her whole lesson at the end was, oh, you don't like how this ends? Well, guess what happens in war? Nothing you like actually happens. Everyone just either dies or ends up with PTSD. So if you don't like it, tell your Congress people you don't like it. And this was the 90s. This was before 9/11. I wish some of that had stuck.
It does kind of rule that like a young adult, like I'll call them young adult novels. I don't think I would call them children's novels, but they're definitely like young adult. It rules that an author like that was just willing to kind of like put it all out there compared to some of the other young adult authors, contemporaries of the time. It rules that Kay Applegate turned out to be awesome.
Yeah, Steak Typhoon. Starfish Mouth is also the anus. Did that come up at all?
Oh, that sucks. That's just like, man.
Being a starfish blows ass. Or blows mouth, as it were.
Blows starfish, mouth, yeah. y'all rolled bad on the build, man.
You did,
y'all,
I'm sorry.
The stats are all misallocated. The skill setup is crazy.
Well, you get to be Patrick, though, and get to be just oblivious to everything.
Are they longer lived? How long does a starfish live? Let me Google this.
Yeah, let's go into this. For Microsoft despair, I hope you're ready for animal sense.
35 years. Nah, 35? Man. If I'm doing mouth anus, I gotta outlive a human, man. That's
man. 35?
I know that like lobsters can technically live forever,
that's a bad molt. Deal. Like, good news, you have a mouth anus, but great news, you're not gonna outlive a human.
Great like, news, what are you're we gonna doing die then? Soon. If you have a mouth as an asshole, you probably don't wanna hang around for too long.
You're also just gonna like exist. You know, starfish don't do leisure activities.
They hang around and wait to get eaten.
They lounge. Yeah. They lounge.
They lounge.
That's cool.
They do. They
honestly
vibe.
The life of like just lounging until you're 35 and then being like, yeah, I'm good. Maybe it's not the worst. Maybe they have a pretty good deal.
Yeah, they got to poop out of your mouth the mouth anus. The whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll pass.
So on that note, I mean, what do we do from here when it comes to everything, RE, Xbox and all that? I think you got to make your own decisions. We talked before, there's already some valid reasons that folks have for not wanting to engage with Xbox and Microsoft due to the BDS boycott and all that has entailed. And I know a lot of folks have already been making decisions based on that. Over here at Axe of the Blood God, I think we haven't really had a sit down serious chat about it, but the sentiment has always been like, well, Microsoft is making decisions that are impacting the game industry writ large, so we have to talk about it. We have to like make note of that when that happens, because it's also important to point out like this is going to affect the games industry writ large. I think a lot of companies see Microsoft blinking in the game of chicken and they're gonna start blinking themselves, you know. So it's worrisome to say the least, and I always want to have the best of hopes, you know. I want to end this on at least somewhat of a positive note, in that we still have examples of a lot of teams succeeding. I think the thing that I come back to is kind of a sentiment that's been going around the developer spaces recently, is that it's not that we need more Toby Foxes, right? It's not that we need more Toby Foxes in caves with box of scraps, right? It's that we need there to be a way for somebody to not be Toby Fox and have it ruin their life, you know?
Yeah.
It's we hear a lot of stories about like, oh, they mortgaged their house to make the video game and it was a success. It was crazy. It's like, that's cool.
That's great.
There's a lot of people who did that and it didn't happen. Yeah. There's a lot of people who try really hard and don't hit massive success, or maybe like hit just okay success and stuff like that. And it's important that there not be such a cavernous pit at the bottom that they have to fall into if they try to reach for something. So
yeah,
I think that's just something I go back to a lot, is especially as more developers are forced into independent or quasi-independent states because of moves like this, because they might want to stay in the industry and make something, but you know, they got to figure out their own path. I want that path to not be such a precarious, dangerous one for them, especially if they don't make it, because a lot of folks don't make it. That's just the raw honest truth. So laws that protect layoffs. I mean, this is where unions come in handy.
Yep.
Unions, this might be controversial, I say it from experience, unions might not always be able to save your job, but they can give you a better landing. They can help you in that moment. They can bargain, they can get things for you, because I've been in situations where I got a better situation because of a union, and I can compare that to situations where I didn't have a union and what I got there. And that's about all I can say about that. But I don't know, any closing thoughts, Nadia?
It all sucks. It's just a matter of people losing their empathy and thinking they're God and thinking that they have all the answers. And one thing that always sticks with me to this day, Yamauchi, the first president of Nintendo, as we know it, was a monstrous asshole, but a keen, sharp-ass businessman. But he knew that he had the creativity of, like, a knife. So he just, like, saw this young man painting and liked his paintings. He was painting the Donkey Kong. Not Donkey Kong, but he was painting cabinets. So Miyamoto, and he's like, hey, you seem like a pretty cool creative guy. Do you have any ideas for games? He did the same with Yokoi. Yokoi, instead of doing his job, was making, like, a toy. And he's like, oh, I really like that toy. Why don't you make that for Nintendo? So knowing that he was not a creative person, he was humble enough, which is a funny word to use with Yamauchi, to pass off that creative decision onto someone else. And the tech bros, people at the top, do not have that humble realization about themselves. To them, I mean, these are the people who have told me all my life, oh, anyone can write, anyone can make art. And of course, here's AI. It's like, here's my writing, here's my art. Wow, it sucks ass, because no, you can't write and you can't draw. And you can't put this in a game because your game will... People aren't stupid. They're going to see this and this is a piece of crap. Nobody likes AI. Like, I think what's one thing that unifies the internet as much as it has been, like, dissolved is just we all hate AI. We don't like slop. We don't want to see it in our games. And yet they keep pushing it because they think they're smarter than us and they deserve all the money. So basically, it's just poisoned minds at the top. And how it all ends up, I don't know. How you get rid of that, I don't know. I don't have the answers. I just know that it all sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, this I think this really does feel like the logical conclusion of, like, scorned tech guys finally exactly. getting their moment of, like, ah, we can finally get rid of all of the people who are talented and more mm-hmm. talented than us at this thing specifically and replace them with a thing that we can claim
that we made.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, this is what it leads to, right? It just leads to, like, lots of lost jobs and worse art. And I really, really... I have to, in my heart of hearts, believe that, like, it is going to be a trend that doesn't last because, like, everybody hates this. Like, yeah. None, there is not a positive example, like, a positive PR spin of things that have happened, especially in games and art, of, like, AI being used. And people were like, oh, actually, that was really good. That was really cool. Like, the people are getting more and more vocal and against it, and it seems to be becoming more of a liability as it goes. So I think, like, my heart of hearts, I have to believe that, like, this is going to end up being something like an NFT situation where, like, we just make fun of it enough and it just becomes like, wow, yeah, this is not working. This is not working at all. But I think it's probably going to be around for a lot longer. Because at the end of the day, it's going to be like a cost-cutting thing, right?
AI for game development is not a bad thing in many cases, like it's being said in chat. Like, with coding and whatnot, there are shortcuts it can help you with. And, like, if you're playing a game that's populated with, like, NPCs, and there's a lot of them, and those NPCs are machine-generated, I don't care so much if they're just there to fill in space. You know what I mean?
My thoughts on this are, number one, I have played games way in the past. I'm talking about, like, years, like decades ago that used stuff like very limited chatbot technology and stuff like that. There was a game that I think it was called Interview with the Whisperer or something like that, that used some limited chatbot technology that was really, really something special. I really like that game. Those, point number two, are very different from what's being pitched nowadays.
Yes.
What's being pitched nowadays reminds me a lot of the self-checkout line at the grocery store.
Yeah.
And do you ever find it weird how, number one, we decided to institute the self... Well, I say we. The companies decided to institute a self-checkout line when that wasn't really ever necessary. Maybe we already had express lanes. You know what it does is now you just have about, like, 5 to 6 checkout lines that are empty at every grocery store. And you have 1 to 2 technicians who are just people that would have been employed otherwise at the grocery lines that have to stand there and fix the problems that the self-checkout makes every time. And usually you're lucky if they're actually in the area, because sometimes they're, like, being forced to unbox something over in, like, groceries, and they have to hear the ping and then come over, and it's a whole thing.
I know that in Shoppers Drug Mart, one of the biggest chains in Canada, they usually make the poor cashiers who are still running the regular cash counter come over and help the boomers who can't figure out how to scan their stuff. Do you know, when I was young, when we went to the grocery store, there were bag boys, bag people, I guess. Like, there were cashiers and yeah. the bag people would bag your stuff.
There's some places that still use them. It's rare, but they, yeah, they do still exist.
Yeah, but when I was a kid, it was normal. It was, oh, yeah. And I was yeah, like, yeah. okay, now we're doing their work for them. They don't, no one's employed. Where did we all get savings? Did the savings get passed down to us? I don't think so.
No, yeah. It's like I said earlier. It's like, do you think that that meant that like people were working shorter hours and getting paid no. the same? No, no. It meant there were fewer jobs and more work to be done for other people because they're often having to correct mistakes while also having to do the job they were previously hired for. Yeah. All of it. The only thing it did was make it cost less to employ people for a store to quote unquote function. Or have the veneer of functioning. And so I think all of that is very important to say when we talk about AI stuff. And also when we get to the ideas of AI, when you stop and think about it, oh my God, you're telling me you can talk to this NPC forever and it'll always say different stuff. Man, I don't want to talk to an NPC that just tries to yes and me for that sucks, man. That like, yeah. can you imagine being stuck in the world's worst improv loop with like,
oh, and chat GBT Doug has like the, that.
Doug the farmer.
Like, oh God. And it yeah, I want to talk to
Doug the farmer. Yeah. I want to ask like, him what he thinks about world politics.
I hate that.
Yeah, I always talk about this, but it's like if you don't care enough about it to like handcraft it and put it in the art, does it need to be there? And like I understand that like people want games to be like more immersive, so like
they
oh,
want
maybe,
the holodeck
whatever
they yeah, want the like, holodeck, but we can't make the holodeck.
Yeah, we really can't.
I'm old fashioned. I want everything that is in a game to have meaning and purpose to it. Like, I don't want to go up to somebody and have an infinite conversation with a character and be like, maybe I should keep talking to them because like maybe they're going to say something that's important. And then just spend like 5 hours of yeah. my day being like, oh, none of this enriched anything about this world. Like if it's not important, it doesn't have to be in the game. I don't know. And that's an oversimplified way of putting it, I guess. And a lot of this talk I'm sure is, but like, I really do feel that way.
Well, all of it is like buoyed up by the idea of, you know, some lead, some corporate suit seeing this at like, you know, a GDC or something and be like, oh wow, they can do that now. That'll add so much replayability to our video games. And then people will never stop playing our video games. They'll really strengthen our attach rate. And it's like, yeah, no, man, like nobody's talking to Doug the farmer for
yes,
that long,
no.
man.
Yeah,
I'm not walking up to Doug the farmer and asking him like boxers or briefs, man. I'm just asking him like how to get to the nearby town.
It's the only info I want. It's like you ever get like stuck in small talk with somebody, right? If you're on like an airplane and someone's sitting next to you.
Oh,
and like,
I want
to
die. That happens.
Yeah, like where are you from? And you're like, I'm from Massachusetts. And they're like, oh, cool. What do you do? And it's like, I don't want to do this with you ever. Please, I want to put on my headphones.
Yeah,
you walk
yeah.
up to a friend group of like three or more, and you ask like, so which one of you tanks the Uber driver? Like, when you get in the Uber and the driver is like really talkative, like which one of you is the one that tanks it? Because it's yeah, me. Yeah. It's me in most friend groups.
How often do your Uber driver? Because I find my Uber drivers, maybe it's a Canadian thing, or tend to be quiet.
When
I go to America, though, every Uber driver wants to talk to me.
And look, okay, if you're an Uber driver listening to this and you're talking to an Uber driver, I actually, some of y'all, I do really enjoy talking to y'all. Right. I get like great insight into y'all's city. I had a great driver that I was talking to at SGF who loved Gundam. Shout outs to you, man. Like, we talked about so much Gundam for the whole ride. It was great. Other times you talk to somebody and they're like, oh, you do video games? Yeah, I heard they made The Last of Us Part 2 woke. And I was like, please let me out of this car. No.
Kal-El says, tuck and roll.
Yeah. Okay, let's wrap this up. That's the Xbox segment. It's all doom and gloom. I would like to hope it gets better, but my gut tells me that when does it ever?
It's hard.
The important thing is you support the things that you care about, and you make your voice heard. You know, I'm gonna encourage you to act with your words and your wallet however you see fit. That's what I'll say on that matter. Now it's time for a series of random encounters. In terribly timed news, Helldivers 2 is coming to Xbox Series X and S in August.
Good job, everyone. I'll get right on that.
Dying Light Studio Techland cancels two in-development games, claims there have been no staff reductions. BioWare's Anthem is officially going all the way offline and unplayable in January 2026. Former senior Ubisoft staff have been convicted in a French harassment case and will receive fines and suspended sentences. A Short Hike developer, Adam Robinson Yu, has released a demo for a game he will not finish, Untitled Paper RPG, but put the demo out there to check out. So that's kind of neat.
That's actually pretty cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
Persona 5 gacha game, The Phantom X, is out, and people are obsessed with its first palace target, the Subway Slammer.
For fuck's sake, that's what we're talking about.
We're talking about the Subway Slammer in the post show. Don't worry.
So you weren't lying. Because I accused Eric of lying and saying something. I thought he was telling me that, this is a Subway sandwich that you soak in Baja Blast or something stupid and like put cocaine in it and eat it. But no, it's something
that'd be
real.
So much cooler than the real Subway.
The Subway Slopster. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Riot Games, I put this in there because I get to run the show this week, and so I love to put in a little bit of news for me, even if it's not RPG news. This is just Eric's The World is Falling Down Around Us news. Riot Games has opened the door to betting sponsorships in professional League of Legends and Valorant.
It's for the children.
Oh, boy.
The children got to learn about gambling sometime, you know?
But we're heading now to the tavern, where it's nice and cool, and all the terrible thoughts of outside cannot reach us for a spell. Before we get into what we've been playing this week, I want to shout out Summer Games Done Quick is kicking off this weekend. If you're listening to this live on Twitch, it starts tomorrow on Sunday. And if you're listening to this on the podcast services, well, it's already happening. What are you doing listening to us? You can maybe listen to the rest of the podcast later, but go watch some Games Done Quick right now. There are some RPG runs this week, including some runs of Deltarune Chapters 1 and 2, Avowed, Dread Delusion, Pokemon Sword Shield, and an XY run, if I remember right. The Bouncer has a run. Let's go.
Yeah.
Xenoblade Chronicles, Future Connected, Bloodborne, and Final Fantasy IX, which I imagine some of you, look. Last week got heated, all right? Last week got a little out of hand, all right? You know, I'm sure some of y'all have some thoughts and feelings about my thoughts and feelings on Final Fantasy IX. I am going to officially on the podcast say that I am going to give Final Fantasy 8 and 9 an honest college try. I will sit down. Okay. I will try to play them with all the added context and such that I have now and see how it goes. We're going to see. I have a feeling I'm going to like 8 a lot more than 9. I just have a gut feeling I'm going to like 8 a lot more than I will like 9.
Are you going to play 9 on the original hardware? Because 9's real slow on the PlayStation.
No. I'm probably just going to get the versions that are on the eShop.
Oh, good idea.
I was kind of hoping they were going to go on sale with all the sales that are happening right now. By the way, Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth is like $5, and Kenneth Shepherd is trying to make everybody play it. So
yeah,
shout
he's
out to
like
Ken.
Being a real.
It's working.
Witness.
Everyone's peddling Digimon.
It's like the perfect confluence of everyone has a Switch 2.
Yeah,
and maybe some people picked up some games that we'll talk about in a moment. For the most part, I think people kind of picked up Mario Kart World and they're looking for something else to play in their single player time. And also, Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth is $5. And also, a bunch of us were just at SGF and saw or heard about Digimon Story Time Stranger. So it was like the perfect vector. And then Ken was like, my time has come. Should honestly be getting commissions at this point, the amount of Digimon peddling he's done. Most of Square Enix's games are on sale in the eShop right now, Eric. Well, I know what's happening later then. As for what we've been playing, I'll let our guest go first. Giovanni, what have you been playing lately?
Yeah, I'll shout out two games that I've been jumping on recently.
Ooh, I like these games.
That I really like. One is Battle Train, which I haven't seen a lot of people talking about, and I think it got some lukewarm reviews, but y'all, Battle Train's good. It's a roguelike deck builder that is published by Bandai Namco, but it's made by a small team. And the idea of it is that you are making train tracks and trying to connect them to the other opponent's stations, and then you connect them and you send your trains into them and blow them up and you try to blow up their outposts. That's kind of the idea. And it's sort of like a deck building puzzle game where you have like track cards that are all different layouts and you kind of lay them down and try to connect the rails and whatnot, and then you have different like bombs and barricades that you can put to try and like block your opponent from doing things. And it's just your traditional kind of like Slay the Spire roguelike kind of setup where you go into different battles and whatever, you go through the tree of encounters. It is also extremely narrative in a way that I didn't realize kind of going into it. It has like a story that goes through it, and there are like cutscenes that kind of can pop up during runs. And at first I thought that those were kind of like just little pieces of color that are like, oh, here's what the world of Battle Train is, because the idea of the game is that you're in a game show. Like, that's how the whole thing is presented. So I was like, oh, okay, they're doing like these behind the scenes documentaries of the characters talking about Battle Train. It halfway through the game goes in a wild direction narratively and becomes like very, very goofy and very fun halfway through. It's a little bit of a hard sell because it is a roguelike, so you can lose runs.
Oh, that's like a good sell for me. I love
it. Yeah, that's Eric's game right there.
but it like has like it really progresses, and it does feel like it builds towards an end narratively if you kind of like keep going through the runs. And it's very silly. It's very, very deeply silly in a way that like where I am in the story right now is a delight. Just completely ridiculous. And I've been like going through it just to do it. And even like the roguelike part of it has like way more depth than you would think. Like the way that you can build a strategy in that game is surprising. It's like more of a puzzle game than anything. It's cool.
The whole idea, the whole layout of the game is that you have these train stations and you have the opponent train stations, and you're trying to send these explosive trains down the tracks. You're kind of drawing a hand of cards with all the tracks that you lay out as you play, right?
Oh, I love it.
You're kind of controlling different like zones of interest, like stuff that can get you resources to play more cards, or can kind of open up different tracks. I think the part that got me, and when I was at SGF and tried it out and I was like, oh, this has something, was when I realized that I could connect a track to my opponent's base to send stuff at them, but that also meant that they now had a way to send stuff to me. It's kind of a two-way road. And so there's a real, I love games that capture that feeling of like your pursuit of success can be really easily flipped on you in just a moment. And I think that's an effective thing that Battle Train does.
That's the genius oh no meme.
Yeah, exactly. It does that a lot. And it's also neat because when you connect to someone else's track, that also means that like you can play cards anywhere that track is, right? So like that means that you could use a bomb to blow up part of the track that like connects your opponent to you, but like right at their base, so you can just block them off and be like, okay, now I'm cutting you off entirely. Like I took over this,
and now I'm building off all the track that you laid out, but it's all working for me now.
And there's so much strategy to like, maybe it makes more sense for me to build into their track because the outpost I'm trying to get to is so far away, and if I tried to build to it on my own, it's going to take so many turns, but they're right near it, and if I can just get there and then bomb part of the track and then build up there, and that depth goes like really, really deep, and there's great risk reward to it. It's I get why people have been lukewarm on it. It takes a little bit to like get what it's doing, and it is very demanding in some way because you kind of have to like do a lot of runs to understand the narrative component of it. But if you like games like that, especially if you like a kind of more puzzly roguelike instead of like a pure action one, I like it a lot. It's a cool little thing. So that's one of the games I'll bring to the table. Mm-hmm. The other one that I will shout out that I am wild about right now.
Rematch, baby. Yeah, that's a good, I've been telling Catherine Bailey, Cat Bailey needs to play this game. Like it is a Cat Bailey-esque game. Like,
So for the audience, like Rematch is a soccer game that is by Slow Clap, the developer who did Sifu. Complete pivot from Sifu instead of doing another game like that. They were like, what if we just made like, you know, took the idea of Rocket League, but made that even more like reductionist back down to soccer, right? We take out the cars and we just make it pick up and play soccer. Very, very similar though in structure to Rocket League, where it's that kind of like set up, you know, you're in a domed off arena, you can like knock stuff off of walls and whatnot.
Yeah, there's backboards and stuff like that where there's not really an out of bounds where you're like putting it back into play, like kind of proper soccer or whatever.
It's very, very arcadey. And you know, like three teams of three, four or five, there are different modes for all those. Like very, very simple. But like the thing about this game that I think is so underrated, and this is another one that like hasn't been received necessarily like critically super well yet, and I get it, but I think once you get deeper into it, it's like, this game is special. Number one, it just like nails all of the fundamentals of soccer, right? Yes. It's like, it's fun to kick a ball. It's fun to kick a ball. And the game is like, what if we just made kicking the ball feel fun or feel good? And you're like, okay, cool. And then like blocking a goal, that's like a cool thing when you block a goal in real life. What if we make that feel incredible? Just like truly, truly incredible. So it just takes soccer as a sport down to its basics in a way that reminds me of like Wii Sports, right? Just that classic thrill of it just feels really good to hit a tennis ball and hit it back and do the motion.
Bowling.
Rematch.
Throwing that ball still feels good.
Yeah. And Rematch has that quality where it just feels like a pick-up and play soccer game where you are doing all of the basics of soccer, and there's just enough depth to that. Like, there's just enough strategy that comes into, like, hey, you can kind of, like, if someone's trying to slide tackle you, kind of kick the ball away from you so that, you know, they can't get it out from you and then, you know, chase it down. And there's just enough of that where it's everything that you need and nothing more and nothing less, right? It's kind of like a perfect game in like a capital G game way in some way, and I'm like really, really enjoying my time with it.
Slow Clap as a developer has always really amazed me, because I think something that they as a team are really good at is body locomotion. And I know that's like a weird thing to say, but something about the way Sifu moves feels different than most action games do. I think there are a lot of games that have tried to do what Sifu has done and have not nailed it the way Sifu did. And that's because the game they made before that, which not many people played, I covered it for Kotaku way back when, it was called Absolver. And it was like a, what if you took a Souls setup, but it was all about martial arts, and you had a deck that you built that was about going into different moves and different stances and kind of how those can flow from one to the other. And then you would acquire more moves and kind of start to build your own fighting style as you took down these different masters and stuff like that. And it was, I think that game, I've wanted to go back to it for some time now, because I think it was massively underrated, but also I can see the through line that gets them to Rematch, because they have such an understanding of what body means, like what your body, physical body means within the space of a soccer pitch, that like they have all these very thoughtful ways of, I love when you realize that somebody's a good Rematch player, because when they go up to somebody, they don't just try to slide tackle them like they're playing FIFA or whatever. Cause that's kind of like the hallmark of like playing FIFA, is like you just start slide tackling everybody or whatever, or you start playing like it's NFL Blitz. You just try to like murder someone on the field. First of all, in Rematch, there's no red cards, so you can do some really stuff that you probably shouldn't be able to get away with. But also, when somebody stances up and goes into defensive stance, you can do headers, you can kind of do little sidesteps to kind of put your shin out to like block the ball and deflect it and stuff like that. And there's so much just kinetic motion happening. There's so much that is, I feel, too abstracted in games like FIFA, or I mean, you can even take it to Football Manager, but Football Manager is basically just a spreadsheet game at that point. But FIFA and games like that, I think, abstract so much of that individual action that is happening on the field, and Rematch slams it all back down, makes you engage with it. And then also, because you are a single person, you're not flipping control and dealing with CPUs or whatever. It feels just much more kinetic, because there's like, you know, 6, 8, 10 people on the pitch all kind of doing their own thing and acting like a person and not like a CPU that should do soccer things at the proper time. Yeah. And there's just so much more free flowing. No game ever feels the same. And you get into these situations where people are just doing crazy stuff. Like, I had one where we were rebounding it off the wall and slamming it in. I saw somebody rainbow pat, like they did the rainbow kick, which everybody loves to showboat with, and then kind of kick it up over their head into the goal. I saw somebody pass it into the goal. That was nuts. That was disrespectful. That ended that goalie's career. That was disgusting. But like, it's so fun. I do recommend you turn off voice chat. Just
I'm sorry.
Like I've already had a few moments where I'm like, I think I posted on Blue Sky, I was like, it has some Xbox 360 voice chat going on, which like means it has the juice. It does have it has connected, but also means like maybe if you don't want to get into that, turn the voice chat off for a bit.
I couldn't believe it. I think Rematch, I played it during like the beta, and even during the beta where it was like I think like press and content creators, like I think it might have been the day before the beta, it was still that, you know, like people were just really mad at me immediately, just like, why are you slide tackling? What are you doing? You know, this isn't Call of Duty. And I'm like, please, I don't know how to play the game. I'm learning it. Please leave me alone. And it's still happening. Yeah, no, mute immediately. Never listen to anybody in it.
But the second you start to realize, the second you start to like realize the possibilities within the space, it is such a wildly energizing game to play. I will be surprised if we have a good enough year that it takes it off my like prospective top 10 right now, because it's just something. If you're into the idea of sports games, but especially like one where it feels like you're playing a sport and not where it feels like you're playing some sort of quasi sim or whatever, but like you're playing the sport, it captures that feeling. I love Rematch. That's a good
show. It's fantastic. It's really fantastic.
I got to bring something up. So granted, we're not gonna talk too much about it. I played some Magic the Gathering this week, of course. You know, Magic is still good. I'm still in it. Played some Commander matches. My deck is doing better. I'm getting better at the game, all that kind of stuff. Okay. Briefly dipped my toes into Bravely Default. I'm enjoying that quite a bit. It's a good kind of like alternative to the Mario Kart world stuff. I find I'm enjoying a lot of the art style and all that. But we gotta talk about this third game I have on my list, which I didn't put on the list until we started the show, because I just wanted this to really be a surprise. So there's a game called Uma Musume that's making the rounds.
I think I've heard of it.
Nadia, do you know what Uma Musume is?
No, please inform me.
So Uma Musume is a game where the chat's already loving this. It's a game where famous, you know how there are games that turn like battleships into anime waifus, that sort of thing.
Yeah, Nikkei.
Imagine if instead famous horses in horse racing were turned into into idols. So they are Japanese idols,
right?
Yeah, that do horse racing, and by that I mean foot races around a track, and then whoever finishes first gets to like lead the idol concert at the end of the derby.
There's a great urban legend saying that if you draw a hentai of certain girls, the Yakuza will kill you, because the Yakuza are all involved in like, basically, like the horses are based on real horses, and some of those horses are owned by the Yakuza. And I guess the Yakuza, I think the Yakuza should chill if that's the case, but like, apparently they don't like it if you drop porn of their horses.
So I saw this blowing up. I did not believe the hype, but then it got, it reached a critical point where I was like, okay, I'll try it. And I played maybe about 20 minutes of it, and I was like, this seems like it erodes your soul, because
just looking at the opening screen, it looks like it erodes your soul.
It is a gacha game where you can roll for the horse girls. It is built, even if you play it on PC, it looks like a gacha game where you're just inundated with all kinds of menus that at all times tell you that you could pay some money to make it go faster and make it go better. And it's also like, I'm not saying I'm completely against the aesthetic and the idea, but it was really hard for me to get past the fact that I had this idol girl that was in like a full on idol costume in a wet foot race at basically the Kentucky Derby. like my brain just could not square the confluence of ideas that was happening in front of me.
Do horses run in wet conditions? Like, is this a thing that happens?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. So horses run in wet conditions for sure. And then, so I was like, okay, but then as folks at home may know, you know, I don't watch a lot of streamers, but there are a few streamers I watch, and one of them is Northern Lion. Mm-hmm. And he did a 4 hour long Uma Musume stream.
Jesus, poor guy.
And the worst part was, as I was watching it, I was starting to understand that it might have some ideas going on, because you start getting into the actual, like, so you do these career runs where you're training them up over time that reminded me of stuff like Tokimeki Memorial or Princess Maker or stuff like that, where you're kind of building stats. Long Live the Queen for a more recent dip, if y'all have not played some of those older games. But then also like a little bit of Darkest Dungeon, where you're having to balance the idea, which again, you know, builds on raising some ideas, but the idea of like you're managing your energy and your condition and what like state of mind your horse girl is in. and then you go into a match and you're like, okay, well, it's a turf one, which means like I'm not gonna do very well in this because, you know, I'm more of a different kind of runner and maybe I'm a pace, so you want them to kind of keep pace and then make a sprint for it at the end, or maybe you want them to get out to a lead and then kind of like just, you know, try and build such a lead at the start that it's just not able to be recovered. And I'm like, this is, I see the vision, I see the idea. Now granted, Nadia, I have a feeling you're gonna tell me this is just pocket card jockey.
No, but I am thinking I'd like to be playing that right now.
I'm always playing pocket card jockey. I downloaded it, I will say, and I had the same thing where I played it for maybe like 20-30 minutes or something like that, and I definitely see the kind of like depth in it, right? And certainly I get why people are digging it. Wasn't for me. I think it was a little over my head. Maybe I'll go back to it at some point. But my takeaway from it was like, people love to look at people who play mobile games and be like, those people are casuals. Those aren't real games. Those are casual. This game is like a 8x strategy game. Like, it is so big brained that I can't possibly fathom like being smart enough to, or like having enough brain power to like manage everything that is happening. Like, more power to the people who play games like this. Like, I don't love the gacha stuff. That, you're right, is a little soul crushing to me. But like, the level of like management in this game is actually way more complicated than any game that people are like, this is a real like hardcore game. Like, this is like Dark Souls has nothing. It truly nothing on like how much you have to manage in this game. It's wild.
It's kind of bonkers. Like I fear the amount of spreadsheeting and stat checking and all the build crafting that goes into games like this, because that's a different level. That's really like something else. That's where it becomes like, and you can talk about ethically, morally correct or incorrect and all you want, but like seeing that, I'm like, there are a lot of people out there who, you know, they bought Elden Ring and then they just like Googled what's the best Elden Ring build and then went and killed the sick dragon in Caelid to get like a fuck ton of souls.
Hey,
and
don't
then
call me out like
built that. Look, I did it too.
I felt bad for it.
Sometimes, because that's beating the game, that you have completed the game using the tools in front of you. The tools in front of you in Uma Musume are spreadsheets and training that horse girl to foot race better than all the other horse girls so she can be the number one idol. And like that is a difficult and honestly like I don't know, a challenging prospect for someone such as myself. So I don't know.
Do the loser girls get turned to horse food? I mean, dog food.
Do they get sent to the glue factory? I think they just like
boxer.
There's like an academy setting. I wasn't really paying attention to the story, I'm going to be honest with you. There's an academy setting that is kind of the framework for all this, and I think the implication is maybe like they just kind of go on to just be another idol that did not succeed, and you know, you're kind of trying to build the next
on the
big
shelves,
star.
There's something called Idol Chow, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna buy that.
An interesting commentary really on, you know, the turn and burn and churn of the entertainment industry when you think about it. Kind of a biting indictment.
And horse racing. Is horse racing legal in Texas? Like gambling?
I don't know. There's a lot of horses. There's actually horses like down the street from me. I'm not kidding. Like, I saw them while I was walking the other day. They're nice horses. Yeah, I can't beat the Texas allegations, man.
No, I just say that because
people are like, oh, do you have horses around you? I'm like, yeah, but not because like it's Texas and everybody has horses. I just happen to live near horses. All right.
No, because like Ontario has, Southern Ontario in particular, has a Woodbine, which is a very active horse racing. In fact, when I was in Vegas, I saw they were like on the board of like horrible, all the, here's what you can gamble on. It's like, oh, that's Woodbine, I know that place. Yeah, and it's always been a very controversial place, but it is where I learned, because I kind of like looked into a job there, where the management that goes into a horse, one horse, is absolutely insane, and the horse is worth more than your life. And it's, and
yeah,
it's a thoroughbred, so it's nervous.
Watch The Sopranos. Watch The Sopranos, you'll learn all about it.
Yeah, that sounds true.
Oh my. Oh. That was pretty good. Nadia, you've been playing anything interesting?
Playing more Scarvi. I'm almost done, I think. I am actually on the... I finished this Team Star stuff. I finished the Titan quest. Almost finished Victory Road. And here's the thing about this game. every time you finish one of the storylines, so there's three main storylines, you're up against a pretty rough battle at the end of it all. Yeah. So I actually have gotten my ass kicked by the Starfall, the end of that, and the what's the other one I'm doing? The Titan Quest. I was actually quite surprised. And
yeah,
the game is a lot more challenging than I thought it would. Now here's the now that it's running at 60 frames per second, it's like, this is a great game. Is it the best Pokemon game? Fuck no, because you can tell, like, there's areas that are really well developed, like, oh, this has a really cool theme, I like this, and there's just like, they had no time to finish this terrain. This is just mountains and grass, and that's all you're getting. But when you have the upgraded Pokemon motorcycle thing that you have, and you can like scale walls, you can fly or kind of at least glide anywhere, and you can like swim, and once you're doing all that, it's a lot of fun because there's a lot of little secrets hidden away. There's always some stupid trash to find in Pokemon. So I'm just kind of leaping from place to place. I like how the trainers, there's now an incentive to find them and fight them because they're not all standing by the road anymore. They're all just kind of like hanging out in the wilderness for whatever reason. But if you find them and fight them, you can get like a pretty good reward for that in each of the areas. Yeah, I'm just really enjoying the game. I really look forward to what Game Freak can do when they have hardware that doesn't hate them.
Yeah, and when they're not like building off of like Nintendo DS technology, whatever they have been like doing.
I think seeing the way it runs on Switch 2 is like really promising.
Yeah. It's like I said, like I've been flying across the world with no, like there's a little bit of pop up because of course there is, but it's just so much better. And like I said, I can't call it perfect because it's certainly not, but there's certainly seeds of something really great here, and it's too bad. I think Game Freak got in way over its head, basically, and then COVID didn't help.
I'm really glad that it's having a second act, that it's having right now. Just because, like, I remember reviewing it at the time.
Oh, you reviewed
it. And obviously at the time I was kind of like, you know, like it looks horrible. Like this is one of the worst looking and running games of all time. But I remember being like, I think the core of this is really good though. And
it's
like
we can't.
It was so distracting, the fact that it ran so badly, that you couldn't really get into like, hey, like design wise, this is actually quite good, and this feels like a good direction for the series. You just have to get through the fact that that the game goes at 5 frames a second sometimes because there's too many Gyarados on screen or whatever. but yeah, just like the thing I always really liked about it, one is the difficulty thing, where like I actually think one of the more difficult Pokemon games. Yeah,
you have to think about
people want
now.
Yeah, for sure. And people like really wanted that. But also just the fact that like it really does build this idea of like Pokemon actually having habitats in the wild. And like when you kind of go out and can see things, you kind of get a sense of
I really like that.
Oh, yeah, this is where people live. Like, I think it's strong. Like, I do think it's a pretty solid game overall. And now it is better, hopefully in better shape. So
have you played the DLC, actually?
Whew, I played the first one. I skipped the second one. The first DLC I thought was quite bad. But again, I think I was still kind of like, ugh, I can't
believe. The performance was still bad, wasn't it? I heard
Yeah.
Yeah, I really want to go back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to go back and because I'm in the first DLC and I think I want to finish that and then go play the second DLC because I think even on paper, the second DLC sounded more interesting to me. I love the idea of weird battle arena island and all that kind of stuff. I think that always works for me. I love a good tournament arc. So the fact that Pokemon was doing that sort of thing and doing that as the DLC really made sense to me. But also, like, it ties in apparently some of the characters and the professors and all that the teachers from the base game. And I thought that was one of the more interesting things too, is I know some people don't like the rematches that can happen in Pokemon Scarvi when you go back and do the gym refights and all that in the post game if you want to. But I think some of the story beats they get into are actually kind of fun and interesting and novel for Pokemon. So like, I think there's writing in that game that punches above what I would
say
Pokemon's usual punching weight is.
Definitely. Pokemon can punch pretty hard.
Yeah, it can hit, but I was surprised by how across the board, except for Team Star, I still think that was where
Team Star. Yeah, I think something was underdeveloped with them. I like their idea.
Yeah, but I like a lot of the Arvin stuff. I like a lot of the actual Area Zero stuff. I like a lot of the gym leader stuff. I think all of that works super well for me. So, like the world building is pretty good for a new region. I love going to class and learning the history of Paldea and all that. It's really good.
I did my midterms.
And just as like a game that is like, you know, largely for kids, like they found a story that kind of like fits their audience, you know, like it works super well. And it's lovely.
I like the theme of like, here's school. You don't have to go to school. You can come whenever you want. You should be out there fucking around.
Wait, has this been happening in other regions? Like, man, U.S. school sucks.
Yeah. Come on, Pikachu. Let's burn books or something.
All right. Nadia, take us home.
I was going to tell this last week, I think, on the show, but okay. Have you ever had like a day where you're really in a terrible mood and you don't want anyone to cheer you up, and anyone who cheers you up just pisses you off even worse?
Yes.
I mentioned earlier that I used to be a dog groomer, and this particular shop, it was like a little tiny shop, had six women in it. We all just were kind of jostling for space, jostling for equipment, of course, just sniping at each other. And it was such a crowded day that I was having to groom on the floor. And this happened to me a lot because I was the lowest on the totem pole, and I usually got big dogs anyway. So anyway, we have this one day, we're all pissed off at each other. I don't know why, I'm just like angrily brushing this dog. And this guy named Mitch, who was one of those really over the top, guys who all just was always on 10 no matter what. He bursts into this grooming salon, and usually it's like, hey, what's the name of the, Kramer, hey Kramer, how you doing, like that kind of energy. But this day we're just we don't want to laugh, we don't want to talk, just we want to do our job, get out of here. And this motherfucker, he had a full list of Yo Mama jokes, and even though we're telling him, just trying to ignore him, trying to make him go away, he's running down the list. And the thing is with me is I can't resist a Yo Mama joke. Like, it just fucking destroys me every single time. But I'm still like trying to maintain this like stone face as I'm like furiously grooming this golden retriever. And then he gets to, your mama's so fat that whenever your mama's so fat that when someone says, hey, Kool-Aid, she breaks through the wall.
Oh yeah.
Oh no.
And that was the one that broke. So stupid. There's also, God, just the other day, I was looking at a David Attenborough thing narrated, like, blah, 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 here's the whale shark, it's extremely large, and as I'm scrolling through the comments, and some asshole just writes, wow, I didn't know Cody's mom was in this
documentary. God, Cody's ass.
Yeah.
So I
love
just
the idea of printing out jokes, because I feel like the modern version of that is just the Notes app, right? Like somebody has the Notes app where they put all the jokes. Like I literally just went to go open my Notes app.
You have some good mama jokes.
Yeah, what do you got in there? Mama?
What do I got on my Notes app? Is Eric airing out the Notes app right now? I can't read half of these out loud.
Yeah, they involve dorking like it.
Five Stay Nights at Freddy's was actually pretty good. I felt good about that one.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Eclair, I don't think she's that scary. That's not bad either. It's not about the extent of the ant, but the force of the dwarf. Yeah, I like that one too.
That's pretty good.
this one might be a problematic one. That's a post show one. Guy trying not to ask if a game is a roguelike, does it have the runs? That was a pretty good one.
Have the runs.
Yeah,
Kal-El, I had a huge printout. Like, I didn't print out my jokes, but, it was just something that this guy, it's just such of his time. People just print out jokes and map directions.
Zoomer Iron Man be like Jarvis, play that video at 1.5 speed. I like that one.
That's pretty good, actually. That's really good.
That's a, yeah, I
Tell
like
my husband that one.
Yeah. I cannot read that one, but it's really good. We'll talk about that in the post show. For there now, that's been Axe the Blood God this week. We got to wrap it up before Eric gets himself canceled. As always, we're Axe the Blood God, a listener supported venture. If you want to back us, go over to patreon.com/bloodgodpod, where you can back us at any level. We've got all kinds of different tiers and rewards at different points where you can do that. If you donated to our charity stream last weekend, by the way, you might be getting an email soon. We're going to be doing some more raffles. We have a box of Warframe merch that I still have to raffle off, and we have received hidden behind me are all the trading cards and stuff that will be given away. We already raffled some of those off, but some of you were like, well, I don't really play Magic the Gathering, so we're going to re-raffle some of the stuff that was in the box to those who donated during that segment. So keep an eye on your emails. Be hitting y'all up about shipping and all that sort of information soon. And we also have some codes to still give away. I might like do a giveaway within the Discord or something like that. If you want to get in on that, patreon.com/bloodgodpod, you can do that. Before we go, Geo, where can all the folks find you and all the wonderful things you do on the internet?
Sure. Yeah. Mostly right now you can find me on bluesky.com at Mario Prime. That's where I am. But I'll be writing about games again quite soon. You can find my backlog of old articles at Digital Trends, but there will be new places to find me shortly. Nice. Post haste. I'll talk about it soon.
Ooh. Foreshadowing, a tease.
Yes.
As always, I'm Eric Van Allen. Nadia Oxford is over here, and Kat Bailey will be back. We'll be back for another episode of Axe of the Blood God next week. But until then, for Geo, for Nadia, for Eric, for myself, see you all next time, and happy adventuring.
Let's put that behind us.